This is CliffCentral.com. Welcome to the Futurology Show, everybody. And again, I'm incredibly excited. Today we are going to be talking all about disruption. It's my favorite topic, guys.
Yes.
So, Brett, welcome. Mike, welcome.
Hey, Mike. Well, normally we go deaf when he starts talking disruption because he just goes on and on.
I go on and on about it, right?
Yeah. We just wish somebody would disrupt you. That'd be great. But, yeah, it is a cool topic, though, and it's a hot topic. I mean, lots of people are talking about disruption, exponential, all of these things that are causing change for the future, and there's a lot of people that have either got fear for it or they're looking for opportunities to enable off the back of it.
Absolutely.
But that's what I like about it. Why do you like disrupt so much, Brett?
Well, I just like the pace. I like the pace of change. I like what technology enables businesses to move at just a different kind of exponential speed, and you can do so much more with less, and it just breaks the boundaries of kind of what we used to from a business point of view, from how we work, from how we educate. And I guess things are only going to keep moving quicker, right?
Yeah,
they definitely are. But, you know, that's why we've got to talk to people who do stuff. Which is why I'm quite excited about today, because perhaps we should introduce our interview.
I'd like the honor of that. So, with us today, we've got Ian Russell. He's the chief executive officer of BCX, and they are doing a phenomenal show called BCX Disrupted, and they're bringing out incredible speakers who are going to blow the minds away of most South Africans. Ian, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Sure. Well done.
To the show or to BCX?
To BCX Disrupted. Give me some credit.
This is a minor little speed bump in the week.
Closing up on Friday. But it's an amazing show. You've got an amazing lineup. Why are you guys doing this? What is the motivation behind this?
Yeah, the concept behind BCX Disrupt started about 4 or 5 months ago when we were looking at the whole business itself. Yeah. Now, I run a business called BCX, which has grown out of an old IT services company called Business Connection and an old telco called Telcom.
Yeah.
And the reality is neither of those businesses were being terribly disruptive. And whilst we were making a lot of money from pretty traditional IT services and making telephone calls, it wasn't something that was going to carry us forward for the long-term future. So 4 or 5 months ago, we began thinking, how are we going to disrupt ourselves to be relevant in the next 5 to 10 years?
Okay.
And we live in the most bizarre world, right?
I mean, no, we do.
The largest taxi company in the world, Uber, doesn't own a taxi.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I love that. Eh?
The largest accommodation service in the world, Airbnb, doesn't own a property.
100%.
Most importantly for me, the largest voice carrier of telephone calls in the world, WhatsApp, doesn't own any telephony infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Now, where do those things leave me? As somebody that makes and delivers infrastructure, screwed is the answer.
Yeah, they're eating your lunch.
Exactly right.
Sure. So you're going to disrupt yourself. So my background, I've just left Barclays, and our jobs were, how do we disrupt ourselves before the fintechs disrupt us? We've kind of had a bit of an early sight in the telecom space and newspaper space and a lot of different spaces. And this is not an easy job. I mean, you've got quite a task ahead of you.
Yeah. But, I mean, you box yourself even when you use the word fintech, right?
Yeah.
Fintech's a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
Every bank in the world is already a technology company.
Actually. Correct.
So we're trying to create almost a separate niche around saying, well, fintech, it's not. Banking is technology. Technology enables banking.
Lots of smaller competitors.
Lots and lots of more nimble, agile competitors that use that platform as a service concept to disintermediate and disrupt, which is what Uber is. Uber is just a platform that connects people.
Absolutely, 100%.
So I guess going into BCX Disrupted, so you're seeing that you guys are dealing with this challenge, and I'm guessing you've seen the challenges around it, and you're starting to engage and learn and figure out the problem, and you're bringing these great minds that are already doing it to help the other South Africans. Is this where it's going?
It's along those lines. So BCX, by a considerable margin, is the largest technology company in South Africa. Mm. Perhaps more importantly, we're the largest South African-owned technology company in South Africa.
Okay.
We list in one place, that's the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. We have no names to worry about in the Paradise Papers. We are really here.
Okay.
But with that comes a duty of care.
You're not in Jacques Poe's book either.
No.
Okay. So you're clean. You're good to go.
Well, I got a copy if you want to buy one.
No, I got one.
Only 50% premium because
I
like you.
Okay. I got it on Kindle. Sorry, just to go side squirrel here. But I'm halfway through and it's like a John le Carré novel. I mean, it's brilliant. Have you read it?
I've read the first few chapters. There's a lot of bad language in it. I'm liking it already.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal. Just the way he's written it. Anyway, you guys actually need to read it.
Well, I bought it. I'm just terrified to read it. I'm scared. I'm like, this is real life.
No, it's critical.
But the duty of care that we then have as that thing, that largest technology supplier and company in this country to many, many customers, means that we also have a duty of care to the economy. There's a very, very strong correlation between an economy with a strong technology sector and the GDP growth. Doesn't matter whether you look to younger economies like Korea or more established economies like the UK or the US. The stronger the technology sector, the stronger GDP growth.
Yeah.
Yes. So if I'm the largest technology company in the country, we have a duty of care to the economy and to our GDP growth. So if we bring in these minds from overseas that can stimulate and really get thousands of South Africans thinking differently about technology, surely we can have a little bit of a kickstart effect on a much wider basis.
Boom. Actually, I remember the days in Google, we used to look at internet penetration and the direct correlation on GDP in Africa. So the more people got connected, and if you're connecting them, you need infrastructure. And off the back of that, you're offering these digital types of services, and you have the potential. I mean, Brett, you're very big into talking about the middle way of digital.
The digital middle,
The digital middle.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of where we are right now, right?
It's that idea that the end of the digital, the end of the beginning of the digital revolution has happened. We're not waiting for it to start. We're not wading through the beginning bits of it. We're in it. We're knee deep in this thing, and we've got the technology around us. It's now about how do we make the best use of it.
And it's here in South Africa. So, I mean, to your point.
That's great.
Now what? How do we take this to the next level? And it will have this massive impact on our GDP.
For sure. And what I love about the BCX Summit and conferences like it is that it really does change the way we think. It challenges the way we think. And the subtitle of Disrupt is You'll Never Think the Same Again.
Yeah.
And it's great that that's the subtitle, but you've introduced so many great speakers from such a diverse landscape.
Yeah.
Tell us about, I'm interested, is what was the selection process of the speakers for this Disrupt?
Whether they were cheap.
In supposed dollars, right?
I was just going to say, when I look at the list,
they were not cheap.
Will I Am, Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah. So you guys like beer, right?
Yeah.
Beer. So there's a beer in the UK that had a strap line called Stella Artois, and the strap line was reassuringly expensive. My guest list is reassuringly expensive. Okay. So what were we looking for? We were not looking for traditional IT people to come and talk.
Yeah.
We wanted people that have leveraged technology to do something different in their field. So if you take Will.i.am as a fantastic example, I mean, some people will know him from his Black Eyed Peas kind of background, but the majority of his time these days is spent in technology world.
Yeah, that's right.
He's enabling different sound devices. Yes. He's working out how that ecosystem comes together. The last music video he launched a few months ago was called Fire. And if you look at it, the whole of the music video is just about people looking at devices.
Yeah.
The whole point of the movie was around you just disintermediating real life. You're only now talking to your device. You don't talk to the real person right opposite you, right?
For sure.
So he's creating a whole different set of thought paradigms around technology and disenablement of human relationships, which is really interesting. If you take someone like Nick Goldman, you know, entirely around how do you use DNA to store data. I mean, weird idea. Yeah.
Digital biology is incredible.
You really can put files and photos and everything into your DNA. It's phenomenal. Right.
And then you've got Jane McGonigal that's coming across. Now, she's not a technologist, but she's in the gaming space when she believes that gamification can fundamentally change the way that we educate people and make people think about stuff. So, again, a very, very interesting insight point for us to think about as a company. I mean, Telkom Group has a small company called VS Gaming, and we're working out at the moment how do we drive the right uptake of gaming in this country, but not to the detriment of a child's education. Because screen time also has a downside potentially if you don't manage it. So those kind of concepts are very interesting to us.
I actually find screen time is a great way to issue discipline.
What do you mean?
On the back of screen time.
Or off the back of screen time, yeah. I control my kids' Wi-Fi through my Google Wi-Fi. So when there's discipline issues, well, guess what? I'm so sorry, but you've now lost your Wi-Fi access. And there's the screen time problem solved.
I assumed you were going to tell us about how your wife disciplines you. But you've got to get that wrong.
And he's fitted into the group.
Boom. Yeah. Easy, welcome. We usually blame Mike's wife. This is the first time my wife's here.
That's not what she said to me last time I saw her.
Yeah. Oh, dear Brett. Oh,
what have you done?
Yeah.
You do this every time.
I promise I didn't corrupt anybody.
Actually, I think this one was Ian's fault.
Yeah, moving swiftly on.
So we're talking about the speaker lineup and why.
Yes.
And
so thanks for hosting.
I like to try and bring you guys back somewhere. So, three of us looked at each other, different insight points.
Yeah.
And there's a diversity of our approach to this. So I don't mean diversity in the way that we often talk about it in this country, but different backgrounds, different countries, different uses of technology, different ways of thinking about life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hopefully we can open some minds up with those conversations.
I think that's a really important point. And I love the idea around opening minds to life. I mean, we were chatting to Mark Walker, who runs IDC, really about the trends going next year. And it's always kind of like, you know, he brings up SMAC, which is the social mobile analytics and cloud. But really,
I
did, actually. Okay. Yeah, I did spend some time as a consultant. But
we all have a cross to bat.
Yeah, we do.
talking smack, yeah?
Yes, talking smack. But really, the outcome of what we need to be moving towards next year is really the age of being human. And how does this technology enable humanification as opposed to just really another function of what technology is? And I think that's really, I mean, when I saw Will I Am as one of the speakers, I was like, what is he coming to sing here, bro? But then when you actually read, I mean, he's doing amazing stuff and it's really incredible. And it just becomes a very, very interesting collection of ideas and thought processes, because our competition is not going to come from our typical competition anymore. It's going to come from a left field, and we have to be thinking in a very different thought process.
No, I agree. I mean, talking about competition, so BCX runs a huge data center estate. It has to, because it stores data, it manages your computation power. And 5-10 years ago, that was one of our biggest assets and a really big barrier to entry for any of our competitors. I have 17 square kilometers of data center. You think, oh my goodness, that's fantastic. Now you suddenly realize, however, exactly. No. So where is the world's largest data center being built right now? It's being built in the Arctic. Yeah. Why has it been built in the Arctic?
Cool.
4 degrees ambient temperature compared to our 21 degrees in this country. That's one reason. Another reason, they're putting it on a very icy peninsula, surrounded three sides by water. They only have to build one wall across the front to keep this thing secure. Think Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah,
unless someone's got a zombie dragon breathing fire at that wall, you're going to be pretty safe.
Yeah.
Plus, I actually want to see this wall all of a sudden. Yeah.
That says a lot about you.
Yeah.
So I think and then the third reason is that they're putting hydroelectric power in the sea around the ocean that generates pretty much free power for this world's largest data center.
Wow.
Now, how do we compete with that here? Okay. We don't have that ability to create that physical security layer. We struggle with low-cost power in this country, and we've got an ambient temperature issue compared to some of those competitors. We cannot, therefore, think we can compete with that hyperscale
100%.
And some of those geo-economic reasons for locating it there. So how do we have to play differently? We've got to disrupt our thinking about it.
No, absolutely. And not only that, I mean, if we just look at the three big cloud platforms, I mean, there's a big competition there just in there for you. I mean, And it's moving at tremendous speed.
Yeah. And I'm not going to try and take on an AWS or a Microsoft or a Google. It's not my role in life.
You can't.
What we want to be here for the South African customers we look after is to be a trusted broker and advisor. To be able to say to them, you have three choices in your life. These are the three choices. This is our view, which one is best suited for you, given your data usage and the economics that sit behind it, and therefore will help migrate you on that journey towards that OEM.
Fantastic.
But we need to be neutral in terms of which one of those three
you work with. Ian, just to come back, you know, you talked about these speakers shifting thinking. How are you guys managing it internally? If I can just bring it back to BCX, because, you know, you sat down 5-6 months ago and said we have to disrupt ourselves. And the starting point of this, it's how do we think?
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to say, let's go run a lean agile design workshop and we go off and we do it.
But I tell you, we're a consultant, right?
Yeah.
I bet you still sell those lean agile workshops.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. And they go to bargain price too. Just the cheap side of expensive.
Do you want 3 days or 5 days?
Yeah. I've got the form here.
It's about value, not price.
Right? Yeah, exactly. 100%. Exactly. But how are you going about the shift internally? Because, I mean, you put this incredible conference together, and you know it inspires. But you've got to be able to keep that momentum going.
Yeah, I shout a lot.
Not a Brett's wife, though.
Well, yeah. She shouted a lot.
She knows a lot.
I think and moaned. But I think the
no, but I know what that moaning's for.
And reckless scratch.
How do we disrupt ourselves? I mean, being very brutal, being very, very brutal. It's about helping paint a very horrible picture of what 2025 could look like if you don't.
Yeah.
So the alternative is to do nothing, and that isn't a real alternative. So we've turned the business on its head, and we said, look, in our view, we have what we call Engine 1. And Engine 1 are all the things we do today. How do we drive as much mileage as we can from Engine 1 with what's left?
Yeah.
We haven't got much fuel left in the tank, but we want to drive that to make maximum economy from it. So we're reorganizing the business around Engine 1 stuff.
So this is your old core.
Yeah, things like data centers, infrastructure, telecommunications infrastructure, and so on. Tick it over, make it as lean and as effective as possible.
Yes.
Take the cash that you generate 100%. From Engine 1, and then start to make a series of bets on what Engine 2 looks like, which will be your revenue sources in 2025.
Have you got separate teams doing that, separate to the immune system of the old core?
Okay. So very specifically, I created a management team to look at Engine 1, and then I put some goals in place to look after Engine 2, absolutely.
Tell us a bit about those Engine 2s. You're doing some fantastic investments in, the name escapes me, the coding guys. We Think Code.
I was there this morning.
There's a number of initiatives. Very cool. I believe you've got a great online teaching academic platform that's looking really interesting. As I learn more about what you guys are doing, you're touching some really interesting points, and a lot of it's focused around develop the ability to do more.
Yeah, it's a very good point. So, I mean, number one, I suppose, we don't know what we don't know when it comes to 2025.
Oh, yeah.
So we're trying to second guess. And that's exactly, again, back to the reason having some of these speakers around us and prompting some of our thinking. But even if we don't know what we don't know, the one thing I do know is that we don't have the skills and the capacity in our country to drive those businesses in 2025. So the investments that you're seeing BCX making at the moment around We Think Code, which is a great example, and we were a key founding sponsor of We Think Code. We have about 400 students effectively that we pay for every year coming off that production line. If you've been there and you've met the kids, they're quite remarkable.
Yeah, I was there this morning.
It's a proper two-year course. There are only three We Think Code academies in the world. One's in California, one's in Paris, and one's here. Right?
Yeah.
It's that good. Sure. We have a data science academy we're setting up down in Cape Town called Explore. Data science for me is probably the new rock and roll for us. Everything hinges around the ability to leverage and use data. I can't find data scientists.
It's impossible.
That's right. Yeah. So if I can find a couple hundred a year that I bring off my production line, they won't all come and work for me, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But we'll increase the size of the skills pool in South Africa, and as a consequence, our GDP growth will be stronger.
Yeah.
So we're deliberately making those investments in education right now because we know, we really know that whatever businesses we haven't got right in 2025, we will still need more and more skills than we currently have available.
And you're not going to wait for someone else to do it for you?
We're not. Yeah. We're fundamentally not. We've then put a huge investment in BITS University. We founded a digital chair, the first on the continent, purely to focus at digitization and what new digital skills are needed in the economy.
And that's with Doc Berry.
But Professor Barry runs the software engineering team there. Okay. But a guy called Professor Brian Armstrong is the chair of digital.
Yes, Brian Armstrong, yeah.
And Brian and I are working together now on a curriculum for the next couple of years that very much focus on two things. Number one, what are the research areas we want to get the bright kids to focus on at FITS? So a good example is, what's the impact socially of automation on a specific segment in the economy?
Okay. Yes.
We need to understand that
because
we can't stop technology advancement. We need an offset strategy for job loss.
And it's not a simple question.
It's not.
No.
It's not like, oh, okay, cool, let's just put a few extra jobs here then.
Exactly. So if I can bring that academic machine to bear on these problems as well, that helps me. Plus, I want to research some of the future about boundaries and barriers. So some of the research being done at VITS at the moment on prosthetics is a very good example. On linear brain programming. Okay, now that's weird, but that's the connection of brain. It's remarkable things they're already doing. So we're putting some investment in that tertiary education space. We're putting investment in the We Think Code, data science kind of places. And then we're looking very widely as well in terms of how else do we enable the kids, particularly age 12 to 18, to come through the education system. Yes. And that's where bcxlearn.com comes in,
okay.
A free e-education portfolio and platform. All schools get a free web-hosted website, which is fantastic. But the power of this is then we've laid the national curriculum for access for all into the platform, and then we've added tutorials on the classic STEM subjects of science, technology, engineering, and maths. Now, we've just got it live in time for some of the Matrix students now, so they've gone through it, but this time next year we've scaled it properly, and we believe that we'll have a big part of the school ecosystem sitting on this platform for free, which is...
That's stunning.
Well, and that's critical. That's absolutely critical. And the connectivity to that, is that something that Telkom's looking to solve?
So
because
we,
that's the other half of the problem.
If you're a Telkom customer, then it's a free-rated service, okay. So you can get straight through onto it. So mm-hmm. very simple. If you're a student, get yourself a Telkom SIM card. Okay. You've got free URL access straight through to the sites. Absolutely.
And actually, fantastic. Telkom's got fabulous freemi packages, right?
No, they have.
They've really started thinking about solving a customer problem rather than doing with a lot of the other MNOs are doing.
You paid to say that?
No, I'm being dead serious. I've got my kids on it, my wife's on it.
Too.
You know, like,
is that where you met his wife?
Yeah. No, that was a different chat group. But I think what was interesting with Freemi, and it's a bit of an aside, but it's actually a very important insight on this whole issue of disruption. The reason the telecom mobile guys are doing so well at the moment, and we've got double-digit CAGR growth on everywhere we look at it, is because the guys built their network a lot later than Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C.
No legacy.
And those guys built voice networks. We have a data network. Because we've got a data network, the ability to do this kind of packaging for you and data and connectivity and consumption is much easier for us. And it's very tricky for the other guys to get there.
I think you guys are on a winner there because I look at what Mike Sheldon's doing on, what is his business, Rain. And that's also going with that data approach.
Yes.
And I remember when he started doing that thinking, Telkom was already there, but so many people criticize the thinking of being data only, which I think is crazy.
Absolutely. And it's the point you were making earlier, Brett, about data. What's happening on the other side of data?
Well,
if you're giving these kids something that's valuable, it changes everything.
I mean, at AfricaCom many years ago, the one thing I stood on the stage and said to everybody is it's not about the infrastructure. People don't use data just to see if they can use data. They use data because it gives them access to something.
100%.
And there's different uses for data on both sides. So brands want direct access to anyone, but consumers have direct access to anything on the back end. And if you give them that access, they're going to go and consume something hopefully useful amongst all the amusing and inspirational aspirational things. But, Brett, you made a comment just now about how it's solving problems. And we're always talking about how we're trying to solve problems. It sounds like BCX are taking an approach around disrupt where it's around enabling opportunity rather than just trying to solve the problem. Mm. People will innately want to solve the problems that they're facing anyway. And if you enable that opportunity for them to do so, you might have a lot more problem solvers rather than just a lot more problems to solve.
I bang on the money. What's very interesting with the We Think Code program is it doesn't look at any form of background when it comes to academia when they're selecting their students. And in fact, the whole thing is aptitude-based. Mm. And in their very first year of operation 2 years ago, two of the top five students did not have matric.
Yeah.
Because our education system breeds out of you your innate ability to think and gets you to learn by rote. And that is not helpful when you're a coder.
No.
Because coders are about solving problems.
It's creativity.
Yeah. Critical thinking's out the window. But
I just look at the whole of Africa, and I look at how we don't have the traditional education infrastructures in place and the way that we're shaping kids at the moment. And it just screams massive opportunity.
Yeah.
If we can just give them these kind of platforms, and expose the talent that's hidden with billions of people, right? Mm. I get too excited about it.
No. It is exciting. And I think there's a great opportunity not just for companies like BCX to be leading the way, and well done for showing big corporates and enterprises that you don't wait for everybody to realize that they can disrupt or they're going to be disrupt. You're helping people see that opportunity. How important is that going to be going forward into the future that other enterprises, banks and other institutions all start getting more involved in this disruptive enablement or opportunity enablement?
I mean, very. I don't think we're the only people doing it. But one of the things for my frustrations, and education is a great example. I've got a good idea. BCXLearn.com is going to be a winner. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got five or six other folks out there that have got something similar going. They think theirs are going to be a winner too.
Yeah.
How do we bring that together?
Yeah,
because we all want to do the same thing.
The energy spent
for the
competing
right
is better collaborating.
Yeah, exactly. So how do we collaborate to compete? And I think that it is critical, and I haven't solved that one yet. And there's something that we need to do as a country in terms of bringing some of those leadership skills together on some common shared subjects. I think we're beginning to get there with one or two of the newer business relationships that are forming, but I think there's a lot more we need to do there.
Actually, a good example of bringing technology and ideas together is in Kenya. Mm. I mean, when they are on a good idea, the entire community of developers get together and they help each other get that to market as quickly as you can. And their culture is phenomenal around solving these problems, and maybe it's just a different level of problem that they've got to solve, right? if only as South Africans we can get over ourselves and start collaborating truly.
No, I
think you're right. Leadership, let's start there.
And the other thing we've got to solve is we mentioned the word diversity earlier, and I was using it in a different context. But again, you look around the table, we've got four white blokes talking about this stuff, right? Now, the shadow of our leadership is a problem.
100%.
So we really, really got to understand, particularly as we bring the diversity back through into the kids as we bring them through, I want to make sure that in 10 years' time, if this program has been hosted, we actually have a representative group of people around the table talking about it. Yeah. It's really, really important. We've got male-dominated and we've got white-dominated businesses out there at the moment when it comes to technology. That's a global phenomenon. It's not a South African-specific issue. But again, I think we've got to get the organizations in this country to work together on that 100% diversity issue. And it's absolutely critical.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, it's not going to happen organically.
No, it's not. I'm with you on that. BCX actually hosts quarterly what we call a CIO connectivity series, where we get the top 100 CIOs in the country just to talk about technology issues. And we were together yesterday, and I've actually offered just to lead across that group a little bit of a groupthink kind of session, where if I can get half a dozen or 10 of those folks to work with me, what can we systemically then do as an industry sector? Even if each of us just took on two or three kids to mentor through the system, help them accelerate their career, and that shadow of the leader, as I call it, you cast by doing that. If I do it, my guys and girls who work for me will start to do it as well. Yes. And I think it's a really important thing that we need to start to do just to change that dynamic. It's a critical problem at the moment.
So mentoring is a fantastic way of getting that done as well. I think from a philosopher perspective, the ability to have a forum within which to discuss things is very important. And I think a lot of millennials of across the diversities, cultures, races, genders, give people more of a forum within education spaces, within workspaces, because you might be surprised where the next great idea comes from. And like you said, some of the guys going through your institutions of learning are don't even have matric, but they probably have great insight and great ideas around how to solve bigger problems than they can do by themselves. So how important is it to just have that discussion and open up safe forums within which to have those discussions? You don't need to be trying to preach and teach the whole time.
By definition, I guess, you're just connecting people together around the same subject. I think it's absolutely essential. I don't think we're very good at it yet.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Just a thought. I mean, I'm just thinking of the Cape Town water crisis. I mean, this is a massive crisis if they don't solve it. And it could cripple Cape Town. I mean, in terms of the challenges of disruption, finding these critical kind of global problems that we need to be solving in terms of country as South Africa and Africa, how much of an opportunity do you think is in there in terms of the disruption, and how much of a focus is BCX looking towards in that?
It's interesting you mentioned the water crisis. The first assignment we've set the students who start at the Data Science Academy in January is water consumption preservation in the Western Cape. I mean, it's an absolutely critical subject. I think the current estimates are they'll run out in the tail end of January or something. So, it's huge. Again, I don't think we do enough around it. We've been running some hackathons on some very specific areas, like social addresses is quite an interesting one. If you haven't got an address for somebody, how do you get a social service to them?
Yes.
You know, we're working on some quite interesting stuff behind the scenes, which we haven't yet gone live with, around what we call the biometric cloud. So if you can start to really begin to track every citizen in the country using a very simple thing, and that thing is going to be your face, and that face is very easy taken through something 100%. Called a smartphone and a camera, right?
Yeah.
Now, if I can link all of the different records that you have in this country to that one physical image, whether it's a police, medical, or a home affairs record, then that biometric cloud solution can become a massive opportunity to solve some of these social
100%
issues.
100%, absolutely.
We end up talking a lot about the smart contract. And that's not necessarily on the Bitcoin platforms, blockchain, but really from the TLD.
DLT.
I'm getting that wrong. Yeah.
Have another beer.
Sure. Actually, Brett, I do need another beer.
We're having a bit of a crisis at the moment, so
it's got a water crisis. Go for beer. Right?
Go for beer. Actually, I was in one of the hotels this week, actually, at AFRICOM, and the hotel literally said, "Water crisis, please drink our wine."
Well, I had...
fabulous. Only Cape Town.
I had lunch with one of our clients, and they're fruit growers in Grabo area, and they came up for lunch yesterday, and I asked him, "So how's it going down there?" He says, "Well, one of the biggest problems he faces on his commute up to Joburg is whether he should take a dump in Cape Town and flush, or should wait till he gets to Joburg to do it." But it's those kinds of things where people, it's on everybody's topic. It doesn't matter where it's a flippant little thing. It's a big thing, and we're taking it quite lightly in moments because we have to. It's such a big problem that if we actually start looking at it, the reality of what that means is huge.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And I don't know what your question was.
I was going with the question there, and it's got something.
You're talking about DLT?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the smart contract play, because we're talking about humans and the biometrics, but it actually applies to everything, right? Mm. All resources we should be possibly tracking. And what's the impact of that? We're getting the data. Once we understand where everything is and what everything's kind of doing, we can start doing some pretty interesting analysis.
And improving it.
And improving things. Yeah.
100%.
But it's a big statement, right?
It's a big statement. And then, as I said earlier, that offset strategy between the social impact of something like a DLT play that plays all the way through, a blockchain play, and the loss of jobs and automation. You know, we need to sort of, in our own minds, understand how the two things can support
and
each other.
We'll go to Mr. Cowan for this.
It's called UBI.
Universal Basic Income. And it's a good topic.
Every time we get on the topic, he's up. Yeah,
well, you know what? No, but it's absolutely critical. Because, I mean, we just extrapolate from where we're sitting now. We have to de-link income from work.
Yeah, the value system is not financial.
No, it's not sustainable. And, you know, at the end of the day, the capitalistic system is driven by consumers. When you no longer have employers earning money, you no longer have consumers. We don't have a capitalistic society. So everything that we're doing here generates nothing. We've got to find an alternative solution. And it's not a boom, 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 quick, you know.
And
but it's a challenge.
What's BCX's view on UBI, or have you guys started looking into that yet, or
was it like us around a drink?
A lot more beer before we get that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's a very interesting topic. I mean, it gets back in at the summit. We've just announced a joint venture with General Electric around smart agri.
Okay.
And the reason for smart agri, and again, it's going back to GDP growth, but we believe that the use of new technology into old economy spaces is a huge opportunity for us and for the country.
Totally.
So at the moment, we have a relatively unproductive and inefficient agricultural sector in South Africa. It's a byproduct of lots and lots of good and bad things.
Absolutely.
The natural resource that we have here is far greater than most countries enjoy.
Yeah.
So what can we do to make that agricultural sector an awful lot more effective and efficient? What will happen then from a social impact perspective is food prices go down.
Totally.
So the bread line physically lowers. I mean, that's a big issue in that. But also, as you get more competitive globally, you can export more. As you export more, GDP grows. Right?
Absolutely.
So that's why that play with G is so important for us, moving into smart agri, which is completely underinvested in South Africa at the moment. It's a big, big play for us.
Yeah.
A great example is what Holland's done. Getting their smart agri right, they're literally exporting 95% of all their outtakes on agriculture, and that happened in a 5-year period.
It's easy to do.
It's quite remarkable. I mean, in fact, I have a small subsidiary called Fastnet who works in that industrial internet of things space, and they've been running a pilot a couple of years ago in the Netherlands with cows. And they've been putting a sensor in the middle stomach of the cow. Don't ask me how it gets into the middle stomach or why it doesn't go into the third stomach and out into the cow pass. I have no idea. I don't need to know that. But they've done it for two different reasons. They're managing the milking process, so they understand that the right temperature of the cow to be at to get the optimum lactation, to get the optimum quality of milk, so they're using it for that. They're also using it, apparently, as the cow lengthens its stride, a female cow lengthens its stride, as it gets closer and closer to the right time to mate. So you can then start to make sure that when you want to cover the cow, then you've actually got a higher success rate with the bull. And we're doing it. That's real life. That's us, small South African country, doing that in the Netherlands right now. Just around some cow herds. That's remarkable stuff.
I must get the contact details from you, because we're looking at exactly the same problem.
It's very interesting. And then, obviously, we've talked a lot in this country all about how we protect some of our precious resources like rhinos and so those kind of things. But there's a lot of technologies now out there that can not just help protect them, but help them breed more effectively, which again creates a new sustainability effect.
100%. Cool.
Yeah, everybody was looking at the philosopher. I've got nothing, actually.
It's just phenomenal. I mean,
it is.
I keep thinking, I'm kind of thinking, what is it going to be like once we've had these speakers share their thoughts and people are listening to
you go out into the world.
And you know, what I really hope, and I know this is my worry with conferences, is that people get really excited on the conference and then they go back to work.
Yeah.
You know, or like, what can we do to make sure that you get so inspired that you're going to take action?
We can interview everybody that attended the conference and see what they're doing. What are you doing now? Come on.
Thanks to the biometric cloud, I have their details.
With the ubiquity of their face.
Yes. It's a great question. I mean, this is not a one-off gig. I suppose that's an important point as well. Yeah, so okay. We're in it for a minimum of 3 years and probably a journey beyond that because we think it's really important. And actually establishing a new brand and event like this is really important.
Yeah.
And you can't do it in a year.
No, right? You can't. Yeah.
So we're already now talking to the people that we think will be the guest list in October, November next year.
Brilliant.
But then we're talking about what's the right satellite event or two to have during the course of the year as well to keep
Disrupt
the momentum
X.
going. So DisruptX in Cape Town or Durban or wherever we might want to go. And how do we get some of that energy going across the
phenomenal.
Different businesses as well?
Absolutely phenomenal.
Okay, see, that's exciting, right? Because if we're not driving that kind of nowness, and I always think about South Africans. Or South Africans are always going, well, I'll do it now. I'll do it just now. So much now, but no now.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been in the country for 13 years, and I now finally understand the difference between now, and just now.
Cool. Get it just now.
Could you put it on a T-shirt for everybody?
In my world, yesterday is better. Right?
Yeah. In fact, I think we should.
Yeah, well, that and how to use a roundabout.
Fantastic. Yes.
Well, actually, I had a fight with Mike about a roundabout usage, as I said in the car. Thought I was going to die when he treated it like a stop street.
It was a yield.
Give way to the right, remember?
Exactly. That's what I said. You yield and you give way to the right.
It's only after I taught you the lesson after screaming for my life.
No. Come back to BCX.
But it's important. I remember the first time that I got way before Google Maps, right? So I moved here in 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
And the guy said, well, I had to go to a data center in Randburg. Okay. So the guys gave me written instructions.
It sounds like ABSA.
It was ABSA. And I got this instruction that said, at the fourth set of robots, turn right. Okay. So I've gone up and down this damn street, God knows how many times, looking for a Metal Mickey type robot thing, right? So I finally get on my cell phone, and I phone my PA, and I said, there are no damn robots here.
What robots?
I'm at this intersection, and there's a set of traffic lights, and there's silence. Traffic lights are
robots. Welcome.
Thank you.
Next minute, Google Maps is going to be saying turn just now, but moving swiftly on.
Well, have you ever thought about the automated car and what happens when the two cars together traveling next to each other stop communicating with each other? Have you thought about that?
I haven't wanted to think.
Don't
about
go there.
That. I haven't wanted.
I'm still trying to get used to the idea that they're going to be talking to each other. What are they going to? What are they going to say?
True, right?
Hey, little punch buggy blue, and then crash.
I hope the design flaw is that the cars just stop when they stop talking to each other.
But how do they know that they're not there? So why would they stop?
Indeed.
So that means it raises those kind of questions.
It brings us to an interesting conversation about edge computing.
I wouldn't mind talking about edge computing because that could be your big play with the infrastructure that you have here. Right?
It's an incredibly interesting conversation. So edge computing, those of us that are not quite so close to this stuff, is kind of literally what power do you put right on the edge of your network that can do real-time computation without having to go back into a cloud and then back down and creating a signal. Well, actually, the automated car is a good example of it. And one of the things we're looking at the moment is the extent to which the telecom network, rather than the BCX world, with its many, many exchanges, provides a very natural place for an awful lot of that edge computing capability,
particularly
in a software-defined network capacity. So we do think there's a natural asset there that's got an awful lot of opportunity for us in the future.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Because 5G, I mean, we were just talking with Huawei around the whole 5G
aspect. The speed of it is incredible.
And you know, they're deploying artificial intelligent GPUs on their handsets and start making you go, brain?
I mean, 5G is an important play for all of us, but you need to do an awful lot to augment 5G. So an awful lot of the industrial Internet of Things play, if you use 5G technology, requires incredibly energy-intensive sensors and everything else at the bottom end of it. And that's not sustainable for farm or mine because it uses batteries up too quickly and there are too many transactions. So you'll still need to augment any kind of a 5G network with some kind of a narrow broadband IoT play or possibly an LPWAN solution like LoRa or SquidNet. So you've got to augment this thing. I mean, LoRa is just like a giant Wi-Fi, right? And then use your 5G to set up your Wi-Fi and off you go again. Yeah.
So on the opposite end of high-speed 5G is the IoT low-latent sensor-driven Internet of Things and big data. What are you seeing that is hugely beneficial from the types of sensors being used and the types of information we're extracting from them?
Yeah, I mean, we have quite a large industrial Internet of Things business inside BCX. And what we're learning from that is that there isn't a sort of a spray and pray, one size fits all opportunity here at all.
Yeah.
And the customers and the sectors that we're enabling there, a good example is oil pipelines. We run oil pipelines. We almost run almost every petrol forecourt in this country off an industrial Internet of Things solution, mm-hmm. whether it's the tank and the sensor that tells you how much is left in the tank and what's happening in the shop or what kind of stuff. They're industrial IoT solutions. We run an awful lot of point-of-sale devices, and so we've got over 100,000 devices connected. Mm. But every one of those devices is connecting to a different technology at the moment. We use everything from 3G to Wi-Fi to 4G and so on and so forth. So we're just learning at the moment that you've really got to understand how you knit together multiple technology sets. And although Huawei will tell you that as long as you've got a Huawei presentation there and a Huawei sensor, then your world is good, it's not actually going to work like that. And how we're working it at the moment, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good point.
Cool.
So, guys, I'm really looking forward to getting to the show
and
meeting some of the speakers. I mean, we had a fabulous time at Singularity.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I was on a high for...
Still on the high.
Yeah, that's probably not just Singularity.
Yeah.
So did Singularity ever tell you when Singularity was going to happen?
Well, they made a guess. They made a guess of 2045.
And then it became 2029.
Did it become 2029? It
came back a bit, and then it was 2023 was the earliest
thing. I think it's very difficult. It's a big
everybody, what is your thought on
it? I think it's a singular problem. I have absolutely no idea. And I don't think anybody does know, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, it may or may not happen, and if it does, would we know?
Yeah.
At that point.
It may be too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It may have already happened.
Cool.
Just ask Siri.
So, guys, I'm just looking at the time. We're nearing the end. And I think we've kind of thrown it out there a bit.
Nice.
I can't wait to spend some time with the speakers, mm-hmm. get their view. I can't wait to see the reaction from the audiences, because I don't think a South African audience realizes where their minds are going to go.
Yeah.
And so I think, how are we going to put it together?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. I think we need to have a question. If there was one question you could ask everybody in the audience, what would it be, Ian?
And people in the audience, I think, as a consequence of being here, what are you going to do differently tomorrow?
Yeah, yeah. Actually challenge them with it.
Yeah.
No, that's great. It's one thing to think about things. It's another thing to put into action.
To do.
And that's what we've been talking about for ages. We love meeting people that are doing things, because off the back of doing things, we see that true impact, and we see whether it's something that's a failure that needs to be iterated and improved, or something that's doing something profound and amazing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that risk... And the appetite to do something differently isn't critical. It's quite interesting. We've just put in place inside BCX something called the FIF Fund.
Mm-hmm.
The last two stand for IT Fund. Okay, you can work out the first F.
Yeah.
And what we said to all of our employees...
Sorry, I'm a bit slow.
Yeah, you are. But I've been noticing that for the last 40 minutes, so it's fine. It's fine.
So, you can listen to the podcast later.
Okay. So send me the crib notes.
I'll send you the crib notes. So the FIF Fund is entirely there to say, okay, guys and girls in the team, there are 10,000 of you working in BCX. You've probably forgotten more than we think we actually know as a leadership team. So what's your big idea? Okay, now can I give you some cash quickly to go and prove or disprove your big idea? It might only be 10,000 bucks, it might be 100,000 bucks.
But prove it.
But I'm going to give you a check. You could come to me with a good idea. I'll give you a check. If it works, I'll give you some more money to go and put it into production.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that FIF fund is about failing fast and forward. And if it succeeds, then also succeed fast and forward. And it's really, really important. And I think actually just doing that creates that's so much opportunity.
That is exciting.
I love that.
That is exciting. Once again, enabling opportunity in that space. Right. Yeah. Now, there are a number of great speakers, but you are also doing a talk.
I'm doing a gig there, yeah.
And what is your topic of conversation?
I'll work that out.
Oh, really?
BCX, have you got any ideas?
Welcome to the Age of Disrupt.
By the way, if you're listening to this after the event, my topic was about disruption. How about
that? Well, we'll ask you after your talk, and we look forward to it. And,
phenomenal.
Thank you so much for joining us,
Mr.
Ian Russell from BCX.
Cheers, thank you very much.
And until the next episode of the Futurology Show, which will be with the speakers of BCX, and all the things happening at Disrupt, which we're very excited about. You can catch us then, and you can listen to the podcasts, and you can tweet us at Futurology Show.
Oh, I'm so proud of you, Brett.
Hashtag whatever.
I'm so proud of
Brett. Hashtag whatever makes you interested. Hashtag anything hashtagable. And
hashtag
we'll start a conversation.
Disrupt, right?
Hashtag. Yeah. Is that the hashtag?
It is. With 280 characters at your disposal now.
There we go.
Rock and roll.
Look at that.
Don't say we never gave you nothing. Until the next
Fantastic.
One.
Fantastic.
Keep
cheers,
up.
Thanks,
cheers. Cliffcentral.com.